Everyone has a pile that they are just trying to navigate through to get through the day. And if you treat people with that belief, then you treat them differently. And you may never know what that pile is in their life, and you don't need to know. It's not your business. But if you treat them as though they have it, then you really treat people better.
This is the L3 Leadership Podcast, episode number 190.
This is the L3 Leadership Podcast. And now here is your host, Doug Smith.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the L3 Leadership Podcast. My name is Doug Smith, and I am your host. In this episode, you will hear part two of my interview with Dr. Leslie Braczek. If you're unfamiliar with Dr. Braczek, let me just tell you a little bit about her. She is co-founder and managing partner of My Next Season, a company whose mission is to provide a bridge for retiring executives to transition from corporate careers oriented around productivity to a life season anchored in purpose. Professionally, Leslie is a veteran CEO coach, in which her work often involves preparing EVPs for C-suite succession, including coaching them during their early years at the helm. Her coaching clients have included senior-most executives at General Electric, Bell Atlantic, ExxonMobil, H.J. Hines, and many others. She's an entrepreneur, a consultant, an author, an educator, keynote speaker, and a board member. And on a personal level, she is a wife, a mother, a community leader, and a philanthropist. In this episode, you're going to get to hear us talk about overcoming tragedy. She shares a very vulnerable story, and I think that you'll just learn a lot from what she learned through going through that. You'll hear her talk about her thoughts on faith and money, and of course, we walk her through our lightning round questions, which I know that you'll love her answers to all of those. And again, I just want to encourage you, if you have not listened to part one of our interview, I encourage you to go back in episode 189 and listen to that. In that episode specifically, you'll hear Dr. Braczek talk about executive leadership, sales, succession, and so much more. Again, you can go back and listen to that in episode number 189. But before we dive into the interview, I just want to thank our sponsor, Alex Tulandon. Alex is a full-time realtor with Keller Williams Realty. And if you're looking to buy or sell a house in the Pittsburgh market, Alex is your guy. He is a member and a supporter of L3 Leadership, and he would love the opportunity to connect with you. If you'd like to learn more about Alex, go to PittsburghPropertyShowcase.com. With that being said, let's dive right into the interview with Dr. Braczek, and I'll be back at the end with a few announcements.
One area that I love to talk to leaders about is just money, especially from a young leader's perspective.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, over the course, both personally and professionally, what of your journey, what have you learned about money?
I've learned a lot about money. It's a funny thing. So my first job was 100% commission. I had no guaranteed income. I had no health benefits. I had nothing. And my newly acquired husband was in graduate school. So we had, although he had a paid teaching assistantship, you know, we had bills. We were going to have bills quickly, and I was 100% commission. So if I didn't work, I didn't get paid, but and it wasn't sales commission, it was work, like billing my time. So, you know, I did well. I was successful at it, very successful at it. It gave us enough money to then be able to buy a house. And then buying that house allowed us, when we moved to Pittsburgh, to have a down payment to buy a more expensive house. And so my relationship with money has always been one of work hard, save, work hard, earn, save. I'd consider myself a mild investor. We do some investments, but it's not a huge focus, of what we do in terms of stocks and bonds and such. But clearly money enables you to do things you really want to do. And so I've always tried to work hard so that I had enough that I could do the things I want to do, which in my case is giving back. We give away a lot of money. I love to do that. Nothing brings me greater joy, to be truthful. And so whether it's scholarshiping, donating money for scholarships, or helping something be built that I think is important, or helping a problem be solved, or helping underserved people get a leg up or have a way to achieve a dream or a vision. That's what we're kind of about as a family. So I want to always make a good amount of money, but frankly, because I like to give it away. I don't drive a fancy car, and I mean, I live in a beautiful home, and but I don't, I'm not big on stuff. I'm more, I love to give money away to things that I care about.
Yeah. So I know you said work hard, earn, and save. Yeah. Any other advice that you would give your kids? I mean, your kids are starting off, I guess, their lives. What advice do you have for them when it comes to money?
Well, the same. I think you have to live within your means. I think the biggest thing is living within your means. And we, you know, I started out in a little cottage in the woods, you know, that had more critters than I cared to, but it was what we could afford at the time. And, you know, we used to laugh about it. It had spiders. I hate spiders. Like, it just, you know, it was not a place that I loved, but it was a place we could afford. And so we have always lived within our means. And I'll tell you a story. We had, you know, I have two children, and I had a child in between them who was very sick. And she spent her life at Children's Hospital, and eventually she passed away. And there came up a point in time where we thought we thought she was going to live and recover from her surgeries for most of her life. And there was a time where it became clear we were going to be bringing her home, and she might still have a feeding tube, and she might have some other complications. And I never left the hospital for those 32 days that she was in there. I never physically left. My husband brought our son out to visit me at the hospital, and I was journaling. As a behavioral scientist, I kept thinking I could help solve her problems. I became very engrossed in the whole helping her. And when we realized that we were going to bring her home, my husband, who was the stay-at-home dad, thought was overwhelmed by the and a little intimidated by the medical complexities of her condition, where I was very drawn to it. I felt very comfortable with it. My father was a doctor. My mother was a nurse. I don't know. I just felt comfortable among that complicated. So we had the very explicit conversation that we were going to switch. So he was going to teach, because he was teaching English, college English, when he stopped working to be a stay-at-home dad. And I was going to be the caregiver at home. And I said, you know, we'll sell our house. We'll downsize to our house. We can downsize to one car. And we had sort of a very distinct plan of simplification, which really was giving up a lot of what we had come to know and enjoy. But there was no stress associated with that. It was almost excitement, because we could solve for that. And we knew that I would be the better at-home parent caring for her, because I wasn't, you know, intimidated so much by it. And he would not be able to bring in the same income as a professor of English as I could as a business consultant. So we had reached, you know, we figured that out, and we're prepared to execute that plan. And, you know, we never had the opportunity to execute that plan. But I think the key is to always don't fall in love with your stuff, you know, and live within your means, and strive to do well enough so that you can help others too. That's sort of been how we've looked at it.
Yeah. Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that experience as well. I also know you're a person of faith. I would just assume you were during that time as well. What role does faith play in your life, and then even in the workplace? Again, you're going to executive suites at a lot of these big companies. I mean, is it really like, don't ever bring up anything about that, or do you find the opposite? I'm just curious.
Well, my faith, I'll give you the short version of my faith journey, because I think it might be helpful. So my father's Jewish, my mother was Catholic. So I was very well educated religiously. And we had a menorah on the mantle and a Hanukkah bush or a Christmas tree in the corner. We attended both the synagogue and the church growing up. And so I felt very well educated. As long as we stayed in the Old Testament, you know, things were good. And I went to a Catholic university. I was part of the campus ministry team there. So I went to church every Sunday. So, but I will tell you that when faced with the death of a child, I realized that I had a lot of education and not a lot of faith. I didn't have what I needed to help me through that and to sustain me. And the thought that she would be 6 feet under in cold dirt, and that was all there was for her, was overwhelming to me and unbearable. And I immersed myself in scripture, and I became baptized as a Presbyterian when my next child was baptized. So after our daughter Sydney passed away and our daughter Madeline was born, then our son Austin and I and Madeline were baptized on the same day in the Presbyterian Church. And I would say now, and from that point on, faith is my rock. It's my center. It is my fuel. Our church has played a huge role in my children's lives, and our faith is a huge component of their life. And I know even when my son was contemplating marriage, he's now married and expecting their first child, you know, I don't know if he would have married a woman who wasn't strong in her faith, you know, because it's such a huge part of who he is and we are. So, but I really credit my daughter, Sydney, for that, you know, stirring in me, that intense, you know, journey. My husband was baptized. He was raised in United Church of Christ. So he was very involved in the church growing up, but I wasn't in the same way. So now I would say my faith is everything, but.
And you may have kind of talked about this, but I'm just curious, if someone out there is facing something as hard as what you've had to go through, and maybe they're going through it right now, the loss of a child or something else, what would your encouragement to be to them in this season that they're going through?
Well, for me, it just helped to know that other people had walked in my shoes. So there was a group of us with children in the intensive care unit at Children's Hospital. We used to meet at midnight in the waiting room, and we prayed together for each of our children. And it was so helpful to me that they were going through the same thing. And so whether it's finding that support group or people in the community, or for me through books. So I read When Bad Things Happen to Good People, and Rabbi Kushner in that book. That was my first book that helped me after her death, and he lost a child. And so, you know, kind of where is God? Where is God when bad things happen? And that was sort of my big question. Like, was she not worthy of being saved? Or, you know, what happened there? And, you know, to when I read that and to imagine, well, God was weeping alongside me for this, you know, it was helpful to me. And then I next read The Bereaved Parent, and that was written, and it was written by a bereaved parent, and that was really helpful. And then a book called A Broken Heart Still Beats was a collection of stories by parents who had lost children and who found joy in life after that. So for me, it's finding people who have walked that journey, who, so you know, they understand that raw pain, whatever the pain is, divorce, illness, death, anything that's just, it's so helpful to know that you're not alone. And that's what was most helpful to me.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
On a more lighthearted note, I want to dive into what I call the lightning round. So just a bunch of fun questions for leaders that I love to ask. So first one would just be, what is one belief or behavior that's changed your life?
Well, it's related to the story I just shared. It is that everyone has a pile that they are just trying to navigate through to get through the day. And if you treat people with that belief, then you treat them differently. And you may never know what that pile is in their life, and you don't need to know. It's not your business. But if you treat them as though they have it, then you really treat people better. And I think I learned that when I had my pile and felt like a little bit of an imposter trying to be out there running a company and helping executives when I was grieving and sad. And I thought most people didn't know I had a thing. I had a pile, right? But those that did were so helpful to me. So I try always to be the person who thinks everyone has their pile. So treat them with that degree of kindness.
I'm with you on that one. What is a quote that you would put on a billboard for everyone to read?
Actively care is what I would say. You know, it's easy to say you care, you know, but it's another thing to actively care. Actively care means you do the uncomfortable, the awkward to help a person. You know, if a coworker isn't wearing their protective eye equipment when they're operating a piece of equipment, you think, you should really do that. You know, you're going to whatever. And then you let them operate the equipment without it. You know, then you care about them, but you're not actively caring. Actively caring would go grab them and say, dude, put this on. I don't want you to lose an eye. You know, it would be intervening in an uncomfortable way to help a person, to really, really help them. So I would just say actively care.
What's the best purchase you've made in the last year for $100 or less?
It would be this awesome cable that I have for my iPhone. It's like 6 feet long.
I've been doing this question for this year, and literally everything's related to an iPhone somehow.
Really?
Continue. I'm sorry. I'm just laughing myself.
Well, I was thinking under $100. You know, it plugs in. My plug behind my bed is so far from like my nightstand, and so it's just this long cord that I just keep it permanently at my bedside, so I don't have to, like, I can just plug it in when I go to bed, or, you know, it's just so handy. So that's probably my greatest purchase, I think. Yeah.
I'm curious, other than your own books, what books do you find yourself giving away most often?
You know, I love stories about people, no surprise. So, you know, I just finished Kate Bowles' book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. You know, or When Breath Becomes Air, you know, I just love stories about humans on a journey and what they're experiencing. So I think those are some probably of my favorites. They're inspiring to me, people's perseverance and grit under adversity. You know, I find great inspiration from that.
Yeah. Are you a podcast listener?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are your top two favorite podcasts to listen to right now?
Oh gosh. Right now. Well, I haven't been listening to any in the most absolute recent, but you know, I love listening to ones. I listen to a lot of the CEO, you know, podcasts. And then I love things like Oprah's, you know, Maya Angelou's, her interview with Maya Angelou to me, but the Oprah, what's it called?
I'll include a link to it in the show notes.
I love the one, the Maya Angelou one is just particularly inspiring to me. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite failure that eventually led to a success for you?
Oh, I've had a lot of failures. I would say, you know, I don't know if it would constitute this exactly, but I was accused of doing something that I didn't do. And I is a leader. So, I had sold my company for, you know, set price and cash in the business, and we were to keep the receivables in the business. And the people that we sold the company to came back 6 months later and said, "You intervened with these two companies overseas so that they wouldn't pay you until after we took over your company. And therefore, you're going to write us a check for that amount, $1.2 million. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, first of all, I would get kicked from here to like the moon if I even tried. Like, these are two of the like Fortune 10 companies. Like, I'm a pimple on the butt of the, you know, an elephant to them. Like, they wouldn't care about me if I ever tried to do something illegal, which is what I was being accused of. You know what I mean? So first of all, it was so ridiculous. And secondly, I mean, I wouldn't have done it, but I mean, it was ridiculous. So I tore it up and I ignored it. And then a thicker envelope was delivered to me in certified mail with the accusation and that they were taking me, to, you know, to court over this, to a mediator. And so I'm like, oh, are you serious? I really have to deal with this. Like, honestly. So the bottom line was that they were very successful in convincing. They turned the tables with this mediator so that they convinced the mediator that they were the victim of this big corporation. So not me, I was like the middle person, but that these two big companies that were overseas delayed payment so that they wouldn't get it. And so the judge was, you know, rendering a verdict that I needed to pay that amount of money, or that we had to basically reach a settlement. It was nearly that amount of money. And it took about a year of my time. It took about 3 years off my life. The money was multiplied. There was the check I eventually had to write anyway. There were the legal fees I had to pay. There was the stress, the lost night's sleep. I could feel high blood pressure. I was stressed for an entire year, mainly because I was being accused of something that I would never do. But I learned from that, you know, that it's not always a game of right or wrong. It's what people can prove. I know that sounds very cynical, but I was just kind of young in my interpretation of what was happening. And I think had I gone to talk to those people and try to engage in conversation with them and discuss it, and I think an older person would have approached it differently. And I now approach life differently as a result of that failure. I viewed that as a huge failure of mine as a leader, as a decision maker on so many levels, not because I really didn't do what I was being accused of, but I really didn't handle it in the way that was in the best interest of my company, because they in effect lost me for that as a really focused leader for a period of time. And my family paid a price. I paid a price. And so I view that as a failure. And now I approach things differently.
At this point in your life, what is the greatest and most worthwhile investment of your time and money right now?
Oh, my children. Yeah. Or young people in general. I love young people. I love young people. I love helping them. I just love their company, and I love the energy I get from them, and I love being able to give back in any way I can to them.
Do you have any unusual habits that enable you to be successful?
Unusual habits. Well, I meet a lot of people, and when you meet people, if you get to know them, there's a lot of details that they'll share. So I keep notes on every person in my little Outlook note section. So when I learn the dog's name, or that the mother-in-law is suffering cancer, or that they're getting ready to move, or that their daughter's at Denison studying sociology, I make a note of that so that when I reconnect or speak with them, because I meet hundreds of people, I'm reminded of the details so that I can, because I care about it and I want to remember them, but I don't always remember them. So I keep very detailed notes like of quirky things like that, that allow me to stay connected with people, even when I have long lapses of time between connections.
Amazing. I need to do that better. If you can go back and have coffee with 20-year-old Leslie, what would you tell her?
I would tell her to, I wouldn't change a lot. You know, I would just say, love life, and don't skip to the finish line. Just, you know, love every part of it. I think if probably the thing I would change the most, or I would tell her, is when you're playing with Thomas the Tank Engine trains on the Brio train set, really focus on the trains. Don't use that as an activity while you're trying to solve your client's problem that's keeping you up at night. Just focus on the trains and the magic of your son's blue eyes and curly blonde hair, so that you remember it clearly. I think my biggest regret is, you know, it's stressful to lead and grow a business. And when you're a mom of young kids, and you know, you're, and plus I think with the added complexity of having lost a child, you know, you are under a lot of stress and strain, but I wish I had richer memories of specifics than what I do, because I think my mind was oftentimes elsewhere, even though I was physically present. So that's
right now, yeah.
That's what I would change.
That's good. So you talked about don't skip to the finish line, but one day you will make it to your finish line. And I'm curious, when you do, what do you want to be remembered for? What do you hope that your kids and friends and employees would say about you at your funeral?
That she was generous. She was generous with her time, with her heart, with her spirit, with her money, with her love. You know, she was generous. She plowed it to the fence. You know, she did everything she could in the category she was asked to or had opportunity to, and that she brought a spirit of generosity and encouraged to others, modeled with actions. But I think that's what I would want people to say.
And if people are listening to this and they fell in love with you, which I'm sure they did after this, how can people connect with you and what you're doing? And is there anything that you're excited about that you want to share with our audience?
Oh, I'm excited about so many things. Yeah. Leslie.braxic@mynextseason.com is my address. I have a personal website that just is more personal history, that's lesliebraxic.com. If people want to look at articles or books or any more details, there's more there than anybody could want. But that's, I think I'm really focused right now in the whole area of transitions. We just launched a new offering around career transitions, helping young people to really, we're finding a lot of people in the age group that you're tied into mostly are finding themselves in careers that they're finding themselves unfulfilled, not really sure if that's God's calling for them. So we have recently launched a new line of offering as part of my next season that's on career transitions. So we help people to discern and to figure that out and then to take specific action steps. So we're excited about that. And this whole area of transitions, I think, is a real one for all of us, whether you're a professional athlete, you know, that has to adjust to life after sports, or a stay-at-home mom whose last child, you know, goes away to college and you look up and say, wow, I'm an empty nester. What am I going to do next? Or an executive that's transitioning out of a big role. All of us face these life transitions, aging parents, you know, aging people who no longer can be self-sufficient. There's just all kinds of transitions. And I think there's ways we can all make it gentler and easier. So that's really what I'm dedicating this part of my life to, studying and being helpful with.
Great. Anything else you want to leave our audience with today?
No, just stay optimistic. I would just, my main advice to young people is just ask, make yourself known to people, introduce yourself to people, email. I think if there's one disservice that this current generation has, is the informality with which you can get to know somebody through a LinkedIn or listening to a podcast. You kind of feel like you get to know people, breeds an informality in how they sometimes approach them. And then they miss the opportunity to really get what they want from them. You know, so if you want to meet somebody, you can meet them by communicating with them properly. I mean, my daughter, when she was 7, wrote a letter to Madeleine Albright. She was named, her name is Madeleine. So she wrote a letter to Madeleine Albright, and Madeleine Albright sent back a handwritten card, a photograph, one of her pins, to our daughter, Madeleine, later a book about her that was published about her pins. And, it's the greatest thing. We have it framed outside our daughter's, and she wrote in there her last sentence of her card to my daughter, Madeline. You know, she praised her because Maddie told her how great she was doing in math and science. I don't remember exactly what she put in the letter, but Madeline Albright wrote, and remember that sometimes you just need to interrupt to make sure your voice gets heard. Love, Madeline. That was the letter, the card. That was her last sentence. Isn't that the greatest?
Yeah.
And so, you know, but she just wrote her, and then when she came to Pittsburgh, Maddie met her. They met, they had a little dinner together before she presented it in downtown. Yeah, right? So I just think, but if you do it with thought, right, it's not a casual, it's not a form letter. You know what I mean? It's a personalized connection that says, I've been reading about you, or I'm interested in, or I would like the opportunity to speak with you, or I just want to share. I think people can get to people that they wouldn't think they could by doing a personal connection. So that would be my message.
Yeah. Well, thank you for responding to my ask. Sure. This interview, I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Love getting to know you. And
likewise.
Look forward to hopefully having you speak one of our events one day.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to our interview with Dr. Leslie Braxic. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. You can find ways to connect with her and links to everything that we discussed in the show notes at l3leadership.org/episode190. If you haven't already, I encourage you to go back and listen to part one of our interview in episode 189. It is full of phenomenal content from Dr. Braxic, so make sure you check that out as well. And as always, if you enjoyed the podcast, it would mean the world to me if you would subscribe and leave a rating and review and share this on social media. That helps us grow our audience, and we really do appreciate that. And thanks, as always, for being a listener. I never take one of you for granted. I want to thank our sponsor, Henny Jewelers. They're a jeweler owned by my friend and mentor, John Henny. My wife, Laura, and I got our engagement and wedding rings through Henny Jewelers, and we just think they're an incredible company. Not only do they have great jewelry, but they also invest in people. In fact, they give every engaged couple a book to help them prepare for their marriage, and Laura and I just love that. And so if you're in need of a good jeweler, check out HennyJewelers.com. If you want to stay up to date with everything we're doing here at L3 Leadership, you can simply go to our website at l3leadership.org and sign up for our email list, and you'll stay up to date with everything that we're doing. And as always, I like to end with a quote, and I'll quote Dave Ramsey. I saw this recently and loved it. He said this. He said, "You start with dreams for your life, but you don't stop there." I love that. You start with dreams for your life, but you don't start there. Thanks for listening and being a part of L3 Leadership. Laura and I appreciate you so much, and we will talk to you next episode.